WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
The final show of 2019. You, indeed, are listening to Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi. And I think we have a good way for us to close out the year. Two good ways. We will start out the first hour speaking with Adam Bond. We've had Mr. Bond on a couple of different times. He's not only an attorney, but he is also a planning board chairman in the town of Middleborough. Technically, he's the chairman of Middleborough's planning board. We're going to discuss marijuana. Why are we discussing marijuana? Well, maybe you heard the recent report as to how well the Commonwealth has done since deciding to allow the sale and cultivation of recreational marijuana. I think this goes along with the medical marijuana side of things, but I believe that the report was for the nearly $500 million worth of sales was due to adult recreational marijuana. Regardless of the number of the conversation that I plan on having with Mr. Bond in the first hour, normally I would minimize this to a 20-minute segment. But we're going to kind of take a look at it from a couple of different levels. First off, when Mr. Bond is somebody who, as a member of the planning board, he's part of the municipality when it comes time to decide where it's best to zone the conversations. As many communities that do allow retail outlets to set up shop, Mr. Bond is one of those who's in a part of the process. Whether it's the Zoning Board of Appeals, the Planning Board, and then ultimately the deciding entity in town, the Board of Selectmen, of course, will give out the host community agreements if they deem an organization or an individual or a party fit to be able to operate and have followed all the procedures that have been put forth by the CCC. That, of course, is the Cannabis Control Commission that the state assembled and put together soon after the law passed in 2016. We'll talk with Adam about that. As Mr. Bond says that if you are somebody who does purchase marijuana, you may want to be a little bit more aware when you're going into a place and purchasing. That's all I'm going to say. Because it is legal here in it's legal here in Massachusetts, but it's not federally. We'll leave it with that. So that's the first hour. Second hour is Mr. John Buckley, Plymouth County Register of Deeds. We love to have him on every so often, whether it's quarterly, a couple times a year, talk about things in the county, but more so real estate sales. And joining him will be Richard Rosen. We know we have Mr. Rosen is a fantastic sponsor of Monday Night Talk for the two restaurants that he owns in downtown Whitman. But he also is a well-known realtor on the South Shore. And usually whenever we have Mr. Buckley in to talk about numbers, we like to have a realtor in. In the past, we've had Sharon McNamara here. Sharon, she's on every Tuesday night as she broadcasts from her location now in Pembroke, which is fantastic. We've had Bernie Hassan, who's known for being part of Wycott Realty, doing stuff in Brockton, Easton, the Bridgewaters. Richard more so in the Whitman, Hanson, Hanover, Brockton area. So Richard will be in, and we'll talk a little bit about numbers and how was the year 2019 when it came to real estate. What's interesting, don't forget, earlier this year when the governor gave his speech before presenting his budget for fiscal 2020, one of the things that he had noted was the issue with housing stock, the concern that the state, the one area of need that the state had was enough housing. So we'll get an idea from John as to how we're looking as far as housing and all the things that are entailed when it comes to real estate, foreclosures, median prices, stuff like that. So that's all coming up in just a few moments.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan Smoke Shop. Having a hard time with your New Year's resolution? Well, I have a couple of really good ones for you. If you like to drink alcohol, maybe you should resolve never to drive drunk. If you don't like to drink, you could resolve to always wear your seatbelt while traveling in your car. This message is brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop. Brennan Smoke Shop wishing you a happy and safe New Year. And always wear your seatbelt. Always.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
As we try to do on this radio program from time to time, we like to bring in interesting guests, knowledgeable guests, and talk about some of the ongoing issues, whether it's in one of the local municipalities here on the South Shore, or something that's been going on in the state. This first segment is usually delegated for state elected officials such as state representatives, senators, constitutional officers like the attorney general or the treasurer, even the governor or lieutenant governor. What I'd like to do today is have a conversation in regards to a recent report about how well marijuana sales have been here in the Commonwealth. But there's also a little bit more to it. My guest is Adam Bond, attorney Adam Bond. But Adam also serves in another capacity in his community. He's somebody who has been elected to office as a selectman, currently serving as the chairman
of the planning board.
Planning board in the town of Middleborough. And we've had conversations with different communities in regards to the marijuana issue, whether it was something that a community did not want to have the retail component to it, but they were okay with the cultivation and manufacturing side of things. And they would, of course, have specialized zoning, and there were a lot of conversations. We've had those conversations here on this radio program. I want to kind of, with Adam, knowing that he's someone who participates in municipal government, how things are going in Middleborough when they talk about marijuana. But there's also another side to this that a lot of us don't realize. While Massachusetts is one of a number of states, and it's something that's happening more and more with other states in the country, and that is legalizing marijuana, there's a little legal element that Adam is going to chat with us about later on.
It's an unintended consequence.
Unintended consequences that we will, because the conversation I'm having with Adam is kind of a two-parter. So he will be basically the first hour of the last Monday Night Talk of 2019, which is fantastic. If I could just get your take on marijuana. I mean, how did things come to be in your community? I would think that in 2016, your community voted during the state election in favor of it, yes?
Our community voted in favor, and then there was a little bit of pushback.
Hemming and hawing.
Yeah, hemming and hawing and pushback. There were some groups that got together. They were talking about the gateway drug. They were talking about, oh, we don't mind medicinal, but recreational is a problem. And I have an issue with people calling it recreational use marijuana. I mean, you don't call it recreational alcohol. It's adult use, and that's what it is. I'm more practical in the sense that the marijuana will be there anyway. A lot of money has been spent by the federal government to try and fight the influx of marijuana. I'd rather them fight heroin and fight with the prescription drug manufacturers on the Percocets and all the other stuff and the Oxys. But, I mean, even our police chief, in discussions with him, has said he'd rather arrest someone who was high on marijuana than someone who was drunk on alcohol, because the person high on marijuana is not as belligerent or as violent, most times, 9 out of 10. So I think there's been a lot that has been
made of it,
negative made of it, and I think a lot of that comes from back when it was first put on the schedule, when DuPont was trying to push nylons and plastics, and Ford had just come out with a hemp car, which they have a video of him taking a sledgehammer to it and hitting it so hard and then rubbing out the spot. That's how much better than plastic it was. And DuPont wanted the market, and the U.S. Department of Justice got involved with it, and they created that movie Reefer Madness, and that's sort of where it all started. But it is currently still, some hemp has come off, so that we can do industrial, commercial hemp, which is wonderful. That's a multi-billion dollar industry for the United States that had been going to China and Canada. So we have that, and there's something for the people that grew tobacco to do. But I think that at the end of the day, we're going to need to clear hemp from the schedules. I think in Middleborough, the way we do it, we've laid out a district, the marijuana overlay district, which is Route 28. And Route 28 is where all of the various, I think we have 5 or 6 so far that have applied, and one that we've actually permitted from the planning board because we're the special permit granting authority. They're all in that corridor, which is a commercial corridor anyway. We're not letting them within 500 feet of schools, 500 feet of churches and all that. And I don't think in a God-fearing community like Middleborough that's a problem, considering we allow bars to open up at 8 o'clock and serve.
Are we talking these are retail establishments?
Both.
Cultivating as well?
There's cultivators, there's retailers, and there's medicinal. I don't know what the full canopy is going to be, the full growth canopy, but you can go up, I think it's 150,000 square feet is the max out for any one facility. I mean, one of the things we want to make sure of is that they have disposal, you know, the disposal of what's called a hazardous waste taken care of. Security. We want to make sure smell. We want to make sure of hours of operation, noise, all those other things. But for the most part, you know, there's at least one town I know of that has 1.5 million canopy, square feet of canopy that they're allowing. And, you know, it's an industry. It's something that's going to be paying some taxes. I note that for most communities, they're going the max out, which I think is going to get challenged at some point as an illegal tax. Because still you can't charge these fees unless there is a corresponding administrative cost that you can show. And I think most of these towns are just going, oh, let's charge the max. We'll do 3% and 50 grand. But, you know, I happen to also represent some marijuana companies. Not any that come before Middleborough, but I happen to represent some marijuana groups. They're trying to start businesses. And I've been explaining to them that the host community agreements are abusive from an unlawful taxation or an illegal taxation standpoint, and they should be challenged. And they said, well, first let's get into the towns, then we'll worry about that later.
In Middleborough, I would believe that Middleborough, the Board of Selectmen, is the board that the host community agreements will come through before it ends up going through the rest of the process, correct?
Well, yeah, and the town manager has been designated as the individual to negotiate them and come up with the terms. And like I said, no one seems to be caring at the moment that the terms are oppressive in the sense that they don't match. Under Emerson College versus Boston, there is a standard for determining whether or not a fee is a fee or an illegal tax. And the administrative cost to Middleborough for having one of these things does not continue to be exactly the same the more they have. It's just there's not a whole lot of regulation we're doing with it. There's not a whole lot of enforcement authority we have. So the administrative cost of these things on an annualized basis, I actually think, goes down as you get more and more of them involved. And you don't need to be charging the amounts that you're charging. But they want to rip them because they're making money, just like the state wants to rip them.
So Middleborough has a town administrator or town manager?
Town manager.
Is town manager is a town manager reports to, or is the, who, where's the strength lie?
Well, people will ask that all the time. According to our charter, he reports to the Board of Selectmen. According to history, because the town manager is the man on the ground or the woman on the ground at any particular time, the five volunteers generally will take their direction, or generally will be more highly influenced from the town by the town manager.
Okay. I ask that because I know that during the past year there was questions raised in Brockton. Brockton, you know, discussing what to do, and one of the things that concerned elected officials in Brockton was is that one person, the mayor, was the one who was able to freely give out a host community agreement. Look what happened in Fall River with that individual who was mayor, and later we found out they were, you know, there might have been some wrongdoing done. Now, again, this is still allegedly there was wrongdoing done in order to be able to secure said host community agreements, or at least gain favor with that political person.
Well,
that's why I asked that.
That's why I don't disagree with the legalization. I think that the problem that you have is whenever the state or the feds get into a business, they screw it up because they either go too fast because they're money hungry, or they go wrong because they're just not very bright.
Yeah. My understanding is they the Cannabis Control Commission was the one that kind of designated that each community there would be the one person or the one board, because like I said, Hansen this year had the conversation about the cultivation, but the Board of Selectmen was the one that was able to decide whether or not they were going to get a host community agreement.
And this is just a reflection of the fact that either the Cannabis Control Commission has smoked too much of its own product, or it hasn't thought it through. Yeah. And the problem, and it's what we'll talk about, the problem with not thinking it through is not that the government suffers. The government's going to get its money. The government's going to get its VIG and its revenue. What's going to happen, though, is the unintended consequences of not thinking this through have put the population at a high risk. And I'm not talking health risk. Forget the health risk. I'm talking
legal risk.
And business risk and job security risk, among other things, and Second Amendment risk. There's a whole bunch of unintended thoughts here that the CCC, the Cannabis Control Commission, as a general matter, has just sort of worked through this stuff, and nobody's done a second thought. And I really got to tell you that I want my government officials to be deliberate in what they do, not knee-jerk. I get the feeling that they picked up a bunch of rules from some other state, looked at them, replaced Colorado with Massachusetts, and moved on.
Part of the problem is the way this happened was kind of fast. The way it was put on the ballot, I think it caught state officials off guard, and they were, instead of being proactive, they had to be reactive.
Well, that's also the fault of the legislators, because the legislators saw this coming, and what they should have done was just started earlier. You know, not going out there and giving Delahunt five of the, you know, 10 licenses or whatever that whole fiasco was, and put their greed and corruption aside and actually do something good for the people, as opposed to doing what they usually do, which is how do we make our money? Which legislators are going to be investing in this stuff? Who's going to have their finger in the pie? And I hate the fact that people start out really good for office, and then as they're in there, it corrupts them more. And that's the shame. The desire to get power a lot of times comes from a very innocent place. Once you're in there, power does corrupt, and that's a problem.
Okay, we'll speak with Adam Bond, attorney Adam Bond, but Adam also is the chairman of the Middleborough Planning Board, and we're talking about marijuana. We're talking about, you know, here we are going into 2020, knowing that this is an industry that's already reaped the state of Massachusetts a little more than $400 million. You're talking close to a half a billion dollars that has been realized. But here's the problem, and we're gonna we'll kind of tease this fact before we take a break in a few moments here. But Adam was the one who kind of reached out to me and says, I got something that I think would be really good and something that we want to get out to the listeners. Mm-hmm. And that is that we're sitting here in the state of Massachusetts and we're allowing this to happen. But this is a small issue in regards to an illegal drug like Massachusetts and the federal government, correct?
Yeah, it's not a small problem. It's actually a massive problem. And it's giving the state leverage, for example, if they chose to go through and collect up all the guns, if you're a gun owner, a way of, you know, targeting people that they don't like, a way of doing a number of different things, because all of a sudden you've incriminated yourself in a way that you don't want to incriminate yourself. And that's, I mean, if you're looking for teasers, that's it, is they have gotten you to incriminate yourself in return for you buying marijuana.
That is very interesting. So what we're going to do right now is we'll step aside for a moment, and when we come back, we will pay off the tease as to what Mr. Bond is saying in regards to how you have incriminated yourself. You're listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WKTV. Stay tuned.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
Download previous episodes of Monday Night Talk and listen to them anywhere. Check out 959watd.com/Monday Night Talk. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for our discussion with Mr. Adam Bond, part two of the conversation. As I said, Adam is an attorney, but he also serves as the chairman of the planning board in the town of Middleborough. Is one of the things that they're tackling, like many communities that are embarking on, whether they're doing retail marijuana or cultivating it. And one of the things we kind of alluded to before going into the break is that you, whether you know it or not, if you were a consumer of marijuana, if you were part of the individuals who have been part of the $400 million mm-hmm. purchasing, have incriminated yourself. How have they done that, Adam?
Well, there's the CCC, without thinking about it in the proper fashion and for their own security, has two rules with regard to videotaping. First, you're videotaped in the, you know, when you walk in, they take your driver's license and look at it and make sure your ID is fine. That's one place where they capture information about you. They then videotape you in the sales room. Then they videotape you in the parking lot. So you are being videotaped in the commission of a federal crime for which you may still be prosecuted. You can be. I mean, at one point, Obama had indicated that that he would not be prosecuting any of the places out in California. And then Eric Holder went out there and prosecuted at least three or four of the owners of these establishments. So you don't know what the federal government's going to do or when it's going to do it. And the problem is that you're on tape. The fact that you're on tape, according to the CCC, you need to maintain the tape for 90 days at a minimum. Now, we were having a hearing, and I said to one of the security people for the owners, I said, what is it you folks do with the tapes? Well, what do you mean, what do we do with the tapes? I said, what happens? What's the process for who you share it with? Well, we'll share it with the police if they ask for it. I said, you'll just share it. Well, yeah, if they ask for it, we'll share it. But don't worry, we know what probable cause is. We won't share it unless we believe there's probable cause. First of all, I don't care what a private entity tells me about my information. I'm on film committing a federal crime. That's what I'm on film doing. There's no question about it. But I'm committing a federal crime in a couple of different ways. One, I'm buying and possessing marijuana, a scheduled drug. Two, if I'm a gun owner, I'm now in violation of the federal laws with regard to gun ownership, where I cannot be a user of illicit drugs. They prosecuted a woman in the Ninth Circuit. They prosecuted her and convicted her because she had a medicinal marijuana license and didn't indicate on one of the questions on her ATF form when she bought a gun as to whether or not, where it asked whether or not she used illegal drugs. She said no, and they prosecuted her for perjury. So you are now in a position where even if the state wanted you to be rid of your guns, the local police chief can ask for people's driver's licenses, footage of the purchase of the marijuana, and cross-reference that with who owns a gun, and then take their guns away. That's just one. That's not the point. That's just a symptom of the unintended consequence. Now, when is it that the CCC allows a request for the records? They allow the request for the records for any criminal, civil, administrative, or other legal proceeding. This is not narrow. This is not narrow. This is intended that there be broad access to this information. How do I know that? Well, Adam, you know, there's probably background stuff. There's not. There are delivery drivers, for example. The delivery drivers will have body cams, according to the regulations. And when they go to your house to deliver, they will have footage of you accepting delivery and the whole transaction. Again, an incrimination of yourself. It is a violation of federal law. You are on tape committing a federal crime. In that part of the regulation, they say those tapes will only be given up if there is a warrant or a court order. Why the difference? One, it shows you the difference in language. They knew how to make it subject to only a court order or a warrant with regard to the delivery drivers. They did not do the same language with regard to what's going on at the facility. So therefore, it was intended that they be looser as to what they give up from the facility. The reason it's tighter on the delivery is because you are going to someone's home, therefore Fourth Amendment concerns come in as to, you know, search and seizure and all that kind of stuff. You're going to somebody's home and entering their property. So they want to make sure that those tapes are protected for a warrant or a court order. Now, go back for a moment. They say that you can, for example, access for criminal, obviously, but civil, administrative, and other legal proceedings. A zoning hearing is an administrative proceeding. A Board of Selectmen hearing is an administrative proceeding. So apparently for those things, you could ask for the records. Additionally, civil. Kevin Tachi goes and he buys marijuana at a marijuana facility, ends up in a car accident 20 minutes later. So they go and they get the tapes of Kevin Tachi buying marijuana. Regardless of whether he smoked it or not, it's nice and prejudicial. And of course he was high, but these are the types of unintended consequences. What if you work for the federal government? You work at Otis Air Force Base. Your national security clearance is at risk, and they've got you on tape in a manner and in a place where they can simply ask for it, and they're going to get it. They don't need a warrant or a court order if you take a look at the way the CCC is set up. The other, if you are a veteran and you are receiving pain medication for some service-connected disability, and they find that you are using an illicit drug like marijuana, they will cut off all pain medications and classify you as someone who is a drug user, an illicit drug user. So all of these wonderful things are unintended consequences of the fact that they're trying to create a security situation. Now you say, well, they put cameras in banks. Well, yeah, you're not walking into a bank already at the outset knowing that walking in there and doing the transaction you're doing is an unlawful act. Right. You're going in there to deposit money or take money out or get a loan. Yes, if you go into a bank and you pull a gun and you say, give me all the money, now you're choosing to commit a crime in a place that's taped. This one, they know for a fact that when you walk in, you are intending to commit a crime. And by the time you walk out, they've got you on camera committing that crime. And that they will share it with anybody who asks for it, as long as it falls into one of the broad categories. And that can destroy someone's life if not used properly. And in this age of data mining, and don't tell me they're not going to have face recognition in there, facial recognition technology.
Yeah, it's in play.
So, you know, and you go in there and you do this. So what I'm considering doing, but my board has not voted on it, is signs in the windows, which I'm sure they are not going to want. Now, warning, you are being videotaped on this premises in the process of committing a federal crime for which you may be prosecuted.
You are listening to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, a final program of 2019, of the decade, I might add, as we're heading into a new decade. Providing the hypotheticals, of course, is attorney Adam Bond, who's also the chairman of Middleborough's Planning Board. And we're talking about the very real possibility that the information, if you are somebody who is a consumer of adult marijuana, you go in and you purchase it, that you are being videotaped, and that information can be stored. Now, the one thing I would being a
will
video
be stored
guy, will be stored. But here's the thing, though: I would be curious as to if they are allowed. And I don't know. You could give me the legalities one way or the other.
The
store owners, if they have a videotape system, they have a security system.
Yeah.
That it's large enough that what will happen after X amount of days, maybe 30 days, that they have what will happen is it'll rewrite over that.
No,
space.
They're required by regulation 90 days, unless they are aware of an investigation, at which point it's longer.
Okay.
So they're using sophisticated. Don't think this industry is like a little mom and pop shop where they write over every 30 days. They put a VHS in.
But I'm saying a digital system.
They're required 90 days at a minimum, unless there's an. So I write a letter. Says I'm in the middle of a civil case with so and so. I want you to maintain that until I ask for it.
Right.
They know an investigation is in process.
What needs to take place? Does there have to? Is it a matter of an act of Congress to realize that marijuana is something that is helping to generate revenue for these states and to take a close look not only to allowing it to happen, but also not connecting people to a federal crime or someone who is a gun owner?
Well, it's gun owner, federal employee, somebody going out to look for a loan. I mean, there's also forfeiture provisions for being involved in the purchase and sale of marijuana.
Right. As part of the war on drugs back in the
80s. They've got Absolutely. All this stuff out there.
Yes.
What's needed right now is for the federal government to get off its rump and actually accept what's happening out there and stop waiting for the pharmaceutical companies to try and figure out a matching or beating type of drug for the marijuana that's out there. They're not going to beat it. It's going to stay. It's cheaper, and it's not controlled by the pharmaceutical industry. So the feds need to stop waiting. They need to stop listening to Big Pharma saying, hey, don't make it legal. It'll screw us. They got to stop. Just do what you need to do to stop having everybody walking on the edge of a razor. That's what we're doing.
But as long as you have folks who are, you have lobbyists who are working on behalf of Big Pharma, paying these individuals who take votes and who will make the decisions.
You know what's funny? And I always love this. I have no problem with lobbyists. I only have a problem with people who listen to them. You don't have to act on them.
Right.
You can do what you're going to do. Yeah, that may make you not get back in. But if the next guy is the same way you are, then pretty soon lobbyists begin to lose their luster. The problem is everybody's out there for their own greedy purposes and their own drive, and that's on both sides. I'm not sitting here talking about present or past. I'm just saying I think if you're listening to a politician, you're being fed a lot of BS. Period. I get that locally. I get that federally. It's right now, your rights are being violated through the videotaping, and somebody else can get a hold of these things without your permission. Your Fifth Amendment right to non-incrimination is being stolen from you by the Cannabis Control Commission, a governmental entity. They're saying, incriminate yourself and we'll give you your marijuana.
Is there something that the Cannabis Control Commission can do to circumvent federal law, or not so much?
No, it's federal law. I mean, look, from my perspective, I don't think that legalization of marijuana should be a federal thing. I think it should be a state right. We want to legalize it, we legalize it. If we don't, we don't. And if we legalize it, then you're above federal prosecution. But that's not how it works. So I got to accept the deal I'm handed at the moment. They decided for whatever reason to make it a scheduled drug until the CCC figures out how to deal with this. And it could be a sign, but that's going to, you know, hurt business. You won't get $420 million. Maybe you only get $400. But you'll at least have educated your population. God forbid you have a smart population. They vote the wrong way. It seems to me that what you need to do is stop the videotaping in the areas and don't hold on to a driver's license. Don't hold on to a driver's license. Look at it and be done with it.
But that's part of the provision of putting together
security. Yeah. Okay. What's more important at this point? My security as an individual citizen from governmental intrusion into my privacy, into my constitutional right to bear arms, into my ability to maintain a job and an ability to have national security clearance and all that kind of stuff, or the fact that they seem to believe that some cartel is going to come in and rob the place of its marijuana. The marijuana is not even on the floor. They got to go into the vault to get it, to bring it out to you. They don't keep it on the floor. They don't keep the cash on the floor. So, fine, videotape the back area. There's a videotape of them weighing the weed. There's a videotape of them carrying the weed to the back of the truck, and at the other end, the videotape's in the reverse. They've got a bunch of videotaping. Videotape your personnel. Keep the information on your personnel. Don't keep it on me. I'm just an innocent guy walking. You know what? My view is, buy it on the street. You're safer.
Stay with the black market.
It's just not as good.
The thing I would ask you, this is yet another instance where there was an issue with government. Look what with vaping. I know that there were deaths and that there were, but here in the Commonwealth we had the state step in and just all of a sudden halt the sale of all vaping supplies.
Yep.
Harming many businesses, especially a lot of folks who specialized in that. And just so they can put a law, so they can put a new law in place.
Well, I've got mixed feelings on that because I represented a handful of bodega owners on this issue, and the problem I had with it was that their whole purpose when they came in there, the government people, the people on that side of the aisle, the Board of Health, was this is getting to kids. Meanwhile, they acknowledged that in the past 3 years, none of the owners in Middleborough, even though there had been sting operations, had been selling to kids. So where's it coming from? Okay, but you're going to punish these people for getting it to kids when you're indicating that your enforcement has shown they're not the ones giving it to kids. That's where it started in Middleborough. And I think that's wrong. You're punishing someone for an act they didn't commit. You then talk to kids. I talk to my daughter, and she says, older kids sell it to the younger kids. So the older kids get it, and they sell it to the younger
kids. Is that the way it always is?
It always is. The older
alcohol,
kids buying the
drugs,
beer.
Yeah. Yes.
But once the vaping started hurting people, their lungs, my understanding was that was the counterfeit vapes that were doing that, and the marijuana-related vapes that were doing that. Did I shed a tear when he banned the vaping? No, I really didn't.
Mm.
And I don't buy all this argument, well, people are going to go back to smoking cigarettes. Yeah, if they are, they're probably going to do it anyway. You know, it's a problem when the government interferes with business. But when people start dying, when people start being injured by it, I think there's a good reason to stop and take a breather. You know, and those people, you know, they held their inventory, and now that they're back, they can continue to sell most of their inventory.
Right, they just can't do the flavored.
Yeah.
As they've done a lot, and also what has a part of this new piece of legislation also omits menthol cigarettes.
Huh?
Well, flavored tobacco.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, they've made it more interesting for the kids. Yeah, the kids that can get a hold of this stuff are outlaws. You know, did people wear leather jackets in the 50s because it was common?
No, they like being rebels.
They like being rebels.
Like being rebels. And if you can, you're doing something that's, being a rebel is cool.
Yeah. And so
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the era or the decade.
No. It's the same thing. I mean, they use different words. You know, in our day, you were a loser. Today, the kids talk about, I'm irrelevant, you know, or I'm relevant. I mean, the new thing now is the popular kids are the smart kids, not the jocks. It's the ones that are on honor roll, the ones that look like they're going somewhere. I mean, it's an interesting shift. You know, back in my day, it was the guys on the wrestling team and the football team, and they were the popular kids.
Yes.
So, you know, all this stuff goes around. I just think that I think that the vices that we have all stay the same. It's, you know, it's, I think that if they're going to continue to videotape you going in to buy marijuana, they should videotape you when you go in to buy alcohol. The problem is they do. They do it for security.
Right.
This is not security. This is a crime. This is a state-sanctioned violation of federal law, which will not save you. In the Ninth Circuit, when they prosecuted that woman for perjury, she was trying to bring up and trying to get into the prosecution that I live in a state where marijuana use is legal. They wouldn't let it in. Why? Because what your state does is not a defense to a violation of federal law. They don't care what the state says, and it wasn't let in as evidence, nor would it in a federal court in Massachusetts. It's not relevant. You either violated the federal law or you didn't.
So basically, you being videotaped is in purchasing an illegal drug is indefensible in the federal court of law.
Correct, because you've now done a purchase of a scheduled substance, presumably used it. And if you're a gun owner, now you have a gun that you own, and you've lied on your form, so you got perjury. Then you're also in possession while using, so you got a possession issue. You've got there's so many levels of this that I'm trying to figure out whether, for example, and it's the argument I was trying to figure out, because I was thinking about whether or not I want to sue the CCC on this. Can you, and it's never come up before, can you transfer your Fifth Amendment right to someone else where they now have an obligation to protect it for you?
Mm.
The other one is, and I don't know yet, you know the safe injection zones?
Yeah, that's being proposed or discussed.
Yeah, I wonder if they plan on having cameras in there. Because if they plan on having cameras in there, that's going to be videotaping both a state law violation, because you can't use heroin in Massachusetts, and a federal law violation. So will they be videotaping people not only injecting, but the doctors or the nurses who are helping them inject, which in and of itself would also be a federal and a state crime?
So
or are they going to ban the cameras there? Because, God, we got to make sure that the addicts don't get incriminated.
So then I would ponder this, and basically what you just said would maybe ask, does that make the word safe an oxymoron?
Yes, it does. And when we're talking about government, the word moron works in every possible in every possible way.
It looks like we're going to have to further discuss this.
Sure.
We just got a moment or two left here. You're the type of guy who makes a New Year's resolution, or you're just a guy who changes his ways for the year that comes?
New Year's. I make all kinds of New Year's resolutions. I just forget what they are by the second. But I do what everybody else does. I go and I start organizing myself. I quote unquote clean my room for the new year, and get ready to go. And then by the middle of the year, I'm back to my old ways, and maybe one or two have been changed. But you know, hey, if I can change one thing about myself in a year, that's a good thing. If I change it to the better, obviously.
Well, I want to thank you very much for being a guest for the first hour of Monday Night Talk.
And I am honored to be the last person in the decade to be speaking with Kevin Tachi.
One of the last, because we still got Richard Rosen. And
yeah, but who's he? I mean, really, come on, who are they? I mean, you got me.
That. I don't know how true that is.
I'm not proud.
Okay, not at all. But again, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We'll have you back in the new year.
All right.
Because you have a great legal mind.
Like a sieve.
Well, we are going to step aside, and that concludes the first hour of Monday Night Talk. When we come back, hour number two, Richard Rosen and the Plymouth County Register of Deeds, John Buckley. We talk real estate right here. The year that was 2019, and how successful was the real estate market, the trends. All coming up in a few moments here at 95.9 WATD. You are listening to Monday Night Talk.
ATD FM Marshfield, WMEX Quincy, WBMS Brockton, and Translator W266DA Brockton. This is the South Shores Radio Station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny & Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Find Monday Night Talk on Facebook and share your opinions. Go to 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk.
All right, hour number two feature John Buckley, Plymouth County Register of Deeds, as well as Mr. Richard Rosen. Mr. Rosen, not only someone who you just heard seconds ago promoting one of his two restaurants, the patio at McGuigan's, but also someone who knows the real estate market very well. I would say it's your primary source of making a living, yeah?
And good evening, Kevin. How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
You know, what's interesting is we were talking about this. In all the years that I've sponsored you and all the years that I've been on the show, either as a guest or a co-host, I've never been on the show talking about real estate, which is actually my main business. I just happen to own a couple of restaurants.
But you cannot say that I have never used a source of media to promote your being a realtor, because let's not forget we've done a couple of cable shows.
We have done
Around the House with Stevie O'Brien.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I've done some cable shows, several of them, with our other guests tonight.
With Mr. Buckley, who has a show, The Register's Report, that can be seen in and around Plymouth County. I know that
I know that it runs in at least three towns that I'm somehow connected with.
Believe it or not, and first of all, let me say thank you for having me as a guest again. Richard and I are honored to be on the last spot of the last Monday Night Talk in this decade.
Right.
It's amazing.
And I've been on before, and it's always a great and fun time to be here.
And I still do this even though you've never invited me to one of your bocce tournaments.
Well, you're welcome next year.
I'm hoping one of these years I want my
name. We're looking for new blood.
I want my name to be on that famed plaque.
Well, if you go to Petty's Market, when you walk out, it's on the left and the right of the
door. Downtown Brockton, Does that tournament still go on?
It does. We raise a little money for different organizations. We have some fun beer, wine, and sausage, and always do it the closest Friday to the summer solstice. So we get some, use the natural light.
And of course, no bocce tournament will be complete without the Tartaglias, right?
Well, Hank will continue to brag every time he wins, and they won last year, sad to say.
Yeah. And Joe Angelo, I'm sure, is
Joe
Angelo's somehow in there.
Now that he's on Hank's team, he's won a few.
Oh, my goodness. So they're like the Yankees of Brockton Bocce.
Yeah, we've done it for a long time.
Well, let's before we get into the meat and potatoes of our conversation, how were your holidays, gentlemen?
Very good, thank you. We went away on vacation, just came home. I came home just so I could do the show.
Did you? Yeah, you
not
were,
really, but
you kind of teased me as to where you went.
Yes, we my whole family went away for Christmas, and we get home the other day. We had a wonderful Christmas.
Mr. Buckley?
We also had a great time. Speaking of the bocce and the Italian connection, we had the Feast of the Fishes, as we do every year, down in Providence, Rhode Island, and it's always a great experience.
Wow.
Took me a while to get used to the stuffed squid.
It's an acquired taste. It really is. Any big plans for... I don't have to ask Richard, because Richard is going to be... the MC of his own event, the big Roaring Twenties party that's going to be taking place over at McGuigan's Pub.
We have the patio.
The patio at McGuigan's.
We have a Roaring Into 2020 party tomorrow night starting at 7 at the patio. It's, I don't know the whole terminology, but it's come as a flapper, come as you are, come as a gangster. I don't know how it goes. But I guess what it means is you don't have to come dressed up, but there are a lot of people that are coming, from my understanding, dressed up in costume. And I guess that I'm going to be there in costume, I've been told.
You are?
Yes.
Kathy told you this?
Yeah, it's a package arrived, and that was my New Year's Eve stuff.
Very interesting.
It's going to be good. We have some tickets left. It's a $50 fee, and it gives you a three-course meal and a dessert and candy table and one cocktail and a champagne toast at midnight and party favors and live entertainment. So it's going to be fun.
And the live entertainment is who?
Tag and Bree. John Taglieri and his partner Bree. They play often. They play once a month at one of the establishments. Have been for years, and they do a terrific job. So it'll be fun. You know, it's an alternative that's not a lot of money, and you don't have to drive to Boston. You know, you can have a nice, really nice meal in downtown Whitman, and you don't have to drive far.
And can I just say, it's fun to know someone like a Richard Rosen, and they're I think there are very few communities that have a Richard Rosen, somebody who's always creative. And let's not forget that, you know, you're part of a group that did Winterfest many, many moons ago, and it's supposed to be one, and ended up being 20. And then let's not forget, you know, what you went through to have a cookie be dangling on a crane in the middle of downtown Whitman as you celebrated Nestle Toll House's 75th anniversary.
That was pretty interesting.
And you were part of that organizing.
I formed it, actually.
Yeah, I know.
20-something years ago. You know, we did it for 20 years, and it got tough towards the end, and we were trying to get other people to join and help, and no one would, and then we stopped doing it, and I get trashed every year on Facebook around Winterfest weekend.
Because nobody can duplicate it.
Yeah, because I should still do it, you know?
How dare you?
Yeah. How dare you stop doing it after 20 years?
Well, I mean,
you know, the same thing happened to a group, I think, and I don't want to say Quincy, but I think it might have been where they stopped after 25 years and took a good beating because how dare you stop doing this for us? But no, you know what? We did a lot of things in those 20 years. We did Winterfest. the Winterfest
got
committee.
Bigger, and bigger.
The Winterfest committee built the, raised $150,000 and built the playground in the park, and we did the 125th anniversary celebrations. We did a lot of stuff, and then of course the infamous cookie drop with fireworks at midnight.
Sure,
don't forget that. Well, it was pyrotechnics.
The fire chief wasn't too happy about. There was a conversation.
Well, we learned. I learned that there was a difference between fireworks and pyrotechnics, and the pyrotechnics burn much softer, not as hot, and so we were able to pull that off. And it was videotaped by the New York advertising agency that Nestle's hired. And because it was, we actually made the national news, which was kind of cool.
Yeah, some places drop a ball, some drop a fish. You guys dropped a cookie,
you know.
Chocolate chip cookie.
Chocolate chip cookie.
Made by the students at South Shore Votech,
Now, is that thing going to make a cameo one of these days?
yes, I actually brought it up yesterday. It's still in an undisclosed location.
Of course.
I was thinking of maybe bringing it and dusting it off for tomorrow evening, I don't know. We'll see. Depends how much time I have tomorrow.
The only, you know, I think it was a fantastic idea. The only flaw was you didn't have a big thing of milk for the cookie to drop in.
And, you know, we tried. we contacted a number of the companies.
Hood, like stuff Hood. Like that, yeah.
We contacted H.P. Hood because we thought that they had something similar, but it just didn't work out. You know, at the end of the day, it was fine.
Well,
we did a lot of good stuff all those years.
And I just want to digress for half a second. During the break, we were talking a little bit about McGuigan's, and that's still in my mind because, as I admitted to you, one of your wait staff over McGuigan's, the first time myself and my missus went over there, I had to look one of our favorite waitresses in the eye and admit to her that I'd been cheating on her by going over to the patio. So it was still kind of weighing on my mind. But no, our conversation here is to talk about real estate, talk about 2019, the year that was. We could start out with the quarter.
I could still talk about shepherd's pie and Guinness, though.
Could you really now?
I love what you guys offer over there.
You know, actually, I saw your dad a few weeks ago. I hadn't seen him in ages.
Yeah.
He was in the pub.
Yeah.
Really? Now, has he migrated over to the patio yet, though?
I did.
Yeah, I did. He's been there.
I went for that party they had a couple weeks ago.
We had a party, yeah.
Yeah, and now I'm trying to bait the hook to have him come by on Sundays to check out the brunch. The brunch is pretty darn good.
I'll try that out.
Especially the Texas toast, French toast.
It is good, too.
It's fantastic.
I had that for breakfast yesterday.
Build your own Bloody Mary. How do you go wrong?
Yeah, you can't go wrong.
Nice piece of bacon, some
shrimp.
Celery, some shrimp.
Yeah. Burgers.
It's the best. Get ready to watch a Patriots game. Yeah. I know. We don't want to go there.
Let's not talk about that.
So let's kind of talk a little bit about the market. Well, we'll start with John. John, if we look back at least the last quarter, I don't know if you're probably still gathering the numbers for the last quarter. What has been the final quarter of 2019
been like? Well, it's been a pretty good year overall. And in our last newsletter, we made mention that at the beginning of the year, everyone thought everything was going to crash. There was going to be a recession, if you remember. And we had difficulty making projections because of those expectations. But it certainly has been a great year. We recorded more documents as of today at noontime. Still a day and a half of recording to go in the calendar year than we did in the last couple of years, in 3 years. And that's always a good sign. Sales are still going strong. We had a tremendous refinancing boom over the last 6 months of the year, and people are pretty happy with real estate. The only problem has been that the average sale price continues to go up. Mm. And although they say there's less people standing in line, overbidding and stepping onto each other's place for bids on properties, it's still a tough place for a first-time home buyer to get into.
What John had mentioned in regards to the beginning of the year and the thought that we'd see a little bit of a recession, I'm recalling the governor at the beginning of the year making mention, one of the things that he mentioned in his speech was the lack of housing stock. Would you say that what the governor said was accurate? Or do you kind of find that maybe the further down into Plymouth County, that maybe there is enough housing stock? You just have to be looking.
So, you know, I generally work in the Whitman, Abington, Hanson, East Bridgewater, you know, our little niches in that area, Brockton. I looked today, actually, and the inventory of houses, the houses that are on the market is very low. compared to what it was even a couple of months ago. I found that our business this year was, there was no great increase in business, but there was no decrease in business. It was up a little bit. And again, I deal mostly in new construction, you know, with my condo projects and my subdivisions and stuff like that. I've seen the whole market slow down in the last 2 months, but historically around Christmas time, Thanksgiving, Christmas, it does. Early November sometimes is good, and then it slows down. But I am anticipating a very, very busy late winter and spring. I just think that there's a lot of pent-up demand out there. What John says is it's really difficult to find a good-priced home for a first-time buyer, which is why my condo projects, you know, sell the way that they sell. And I'm sure you must see the condo sales up, John, in the county, because there's not a lot of stock out there. I know, and I've been talking to people lately about Plymouth, and I'm hearing nothing but that town is just busting. It's just busting out. I'm anticipating, I'm hoping that we have a good spring. I mean, the rates are down, and I think that...
Where are the rates right now?
I think in the high threes, you know, low fours.
My goodness.
And yeah, it's...
And they've been low for a while.
For a while, yeah.
I mean, it's not like the 1990s, the early 90s when, what was it, baby? They were double digit, right? Double digit, closing in towards 15 to 20, right?
So the second building that I bought, I'm going to sound like my father now. Although, I think the first building my father bought, the interest rate was 3%, and the second or third building that I bought, the interest rate was 17.5%.
Yeah.
It was crazy. It was crazy. But no, the rates are really low. I just think that, I think there's a lot of concern out there with the politics and stuff that what's going on. There's a lot of people, I think, that are on the sidelines right now, but they're going to come back into the market, which historically they do in the spring anyway.
I saw a statistic today that there's a huge increase of younger people getting to the age of 30 this year. The millennials have been the ones slow to buy property. What in many people's opinion will drive the market this year is that 4.8 million people will attain the age of 30 and they may be looking to buy a home. They're finally getting rid of student debt by that point. There's some great programs out there that help you with down payments. And hopefully people are realizing that owning a home, you gain equity. And it's certainly been, in America, the number one place that you can build equity and build income and build financial assets.
Richard? Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've been in the real estate business for 40 years. You know, I've seen three market crashes, but you know, it always comes back. And when it crashes, unless you're ready to sell, it's irrelevant. You just have to hang in there. But John is 100% right. It's the only place you can build equity. You know, I own some buildings where I have rentals, and you know, I love my tenants and they pay me every month, but I am a huge proponent of, if you can afford it, buy a house. If you have the ability to buy, if your credit is good and you have a down payment, and you know a lot of people can't do that, then it makes no sense to rent. And one day, a number of years ago, my daughter came to me and said that her and her friend were going to rent an apartment. And she was going to move out, buy an apartment. So we talked about it for a while. And before that week was over, I had her buying a house because I showed her that she could pay a mortgage for less than the rental payment was going to be in the apartment. I know, and the price of apartments right now in a lot of places is crazy. But as you move further south, it gets a little bit less. But, you know, you're looking at some of these towns where you're paying $2,200, $2,400, $2,500 for a two-bedroom apartment, $1,800 for
one. And it comes with no utilities or anything?
Nothing.
You're just getting the space.
You get the right to stay there. Space.
Yeah, the space.
And, you know, you can have a mortgage with these rates the way that they are, you know, for $1,800 or less. So I agree that it's if you can afford to buy a house, you want to buy a house.
And Mass Housing has just come out with a really incredible down payment assistance program, 5% of purchase or $15,000, whichever is less, and that's a 15-year fixed loan at 2%. So you're not paying anything back on that. it's a great way to get into the housing market. I'm sure Richard and his crew come across a lot of other great programs, but that's certainly something I'd advise anybody out there looking to get into the market in 2020 to take a look at.
And again, we are speaking with John Buckley, who you just heard, Plymouth County Register of Deeds, and of course, Richard Rosen, well-known realtor on the South Shore. Richard, were you going to say something?
So one of the things that I also recommend to buyers, and you know, it's funny, I've always had all these bank presidents or residential lenders come to me and say, listen, I know you must have a million people coming in here looking for loans, send them to my bank. Well, the fact is that by the time they get to us, they already have a lender. But my advice has to be, and I know a lot of people aren't going to hear this, aren't going to want to hear this, go to a bank. Don't go to an online mortgage company. I know that there's online mortgage companies out there right now, people with mortgages cringing at what I'm saying. But the fact of the matter is, if you have the option to walk down the street and go into a local bank, walk down the street and go into the local bank as opposed to going on your computer and trying to find a .com loan company. I think that a lot of people are asking for trouble with those .com loan companies. I know a number of people that have had issues, like with their tax bill. They have a property tax bill, and all of a sudden they're getting notices that it hasn't been paid by the town, and then they, you know, who do you call, who do you find? It becomes a problem. I've always just been a firm believer, if you can find a local bank, go to the local bank, because then if you have an issue or a problem, you can walk in and actually talk to someone and they can resolve your problem. And a lot of these banks keep their loans in-house, so you can resolve a problem easy and quick. And I suspect that the rates and the closing costs are better at a bank than on a, I mean, as much as they want to tell you that they'll save you a fortune in a .com loan company, I don't believe you're saving that kind of money, because they're hiding the fees. That's just my personal opinion.
It's so funny, you know, sitting here and looking at John and realizing that it was like a little over a decade or around a decade that you and I were talking about when we had the housing crisis and we're having all the issues, and we had Martha Coakley coming in, and we had to have different conversations and special events for folks to come in and realize how to get themselves out of foreclosure and schooling people about the finances of being a homeowner, how things have changed.
I remember an event over at Christo's when they had all the banks and lenders come down with federal housing counselors.
Mm-hmm.
There were 600 people in line
trying
to get in and get a loan modification. It was a crazy time, and a lot of people's properties were underwater.
The robo-signings and all that, that was a big issue.
Underwater. Their mortgages were higher than the values of their property, and there was robo-signing cases and other frauds. Still are some frauds out there. People have to be very careful about what they sign and what they do, and I think Richard's point on a bank that's been in the community is a good idea. But I think we're away from that now. There are many regulations that require the mortgage companies to list who's doing originating the mortgage. There's all kinds of restrictions that will keep people out of trouble. Though I have to say, when I see somebody buying a three-decker on Warren Avenue, Brockton, and paying $650,000, it gets me a little concerned.
Yeah, there are some areas that I agree that are way overheated, that some of the prices are ridiculous. I mean, at one time, you could have bought the whole city for $600,000. I mean, and you know, and now you're looking at a three-family. You know, the pendulum swings after these crises. They go from one extreme
to the other.
Yeah. I mean, there was a time that it was illegal to have a silent second mortgage, and it wasn't many years after that the banks were promoting second mortgages. And that's how a lot of people, they were giving you 105% financing. And that's how a lot of people got in trouble. But generally, I mean, we're building new houses that, you know, the subdivision that I did in Abington, I didn't want to build McMansions. You know, I didn't want to build $700,000 or $800,000 houses. I didn't think that was the market. And when we started at $495,000, I couldn't sell them. So we changed the house, made it a little bit bigger, got into the fives, and we started selling them. And the average price went up to like $625,000. That's the average price, you know, in Abington in a subdivision. We literally had a an in-law that was, you know, over $700,000, which is not an uncommon thing these days in this market and the way things are, is, you know, people building new houses and putting in-law apartments on. But there are some areas that I've noticed that the prices are a little bit out of whack.
Is it fair to say, where do things stand as far as the median price these days for an average family home in Plymouth County?
Well, our average sale price as of right now, as through December of 19, is $440,078.
Wow.
And that's gone up 5% over last year. So prices are still going up. And part of that issue is the inventory.
Supply and demand.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Simple supply and demand.
I will say one addition, kind of counter intuitive to what I said about the $600,000 three-decker. There's a lot of there are a lot of programs now that require home buyer training courses before you buy a home.
What to look for.
Mass Housing records requires that. Groups like NeighborWorks and other realtors run those programs so that people are a lot better trained before they buy a home. I call it the Lamaze of real estate.
I was just going to say, like having a baby.
Right. You know, but they take you through a whole series of things you should know,
sure,
to buy a house.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's take a look at 2019. Maybe do some comparisons from 2019 compared to 2018. And maybe looking forward to 2020. You are listening to Monday Night Talk. When we come back, more with John Buckley and Richard Rosen here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Is Monday Night Talk with your host Kevin Tachi on 95.9 WATD.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See? There is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
The new patio at McGuigan's offers alfresco dining in downtown Whitman. Seafood lovers will love the shrimp scampi, lobster leg tacos, and fish tacos. If you prefer something meatier, the patio's braised short rib dinner and 14-ounce pork chops are customer favorites. Into the latest food trends? Try the patio's Beyond Burger and flatbread pizza. The patio has 7 55-inch TVs and a 9-foot video wall, making it the perfect place to eat, drink, and socialize. And don't forget McGuigan's Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in Whitman.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD. Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, final segment to the continuation of our conversation talking about real estate here in Plymouth County for the year 2019. And we got two great experts here. Richard Rosen, a local realtor who's been in it for, what, more than four decades? Around four decades?
Yeah, it's been a long time. I actually had a paralegal from a law office. You have to provide your real estate license numbers now. And I had a paralegal call me one day and said, can you give me your real estate license number? And I said, I sent it to you. She goes, there's something wrong. Why? She goes, there's not enough digits in it. I mean, you know, my license is, I've had it a long time. I mean, most people around probably haven't had their license.
You get your license.
Over 40 years.
I know people who've had their real estate license for years, but they don't really do anything with it. You know, they might show a house once a year, yeah, twice a year. You're actually somebody who's busy, and again, you're talking about doing new construction, stuff like that. We'll get more into that. And, of course, John Buckley, Plymouth County Register of Deeds, who we have on a regular basis to talk about what's going on in real estate. One thing that we didn't necessarily touch upon, and I want to kind of make sure we wrap up when it comes to the last quarter, and we can dovetail into 2019 itself. That is, we're talking about the finances, buying a home, and the other side of it, folks who struggle, foreclosures. That's another number that you record. How were foreclosures for the last quarter and compared to 2019?
Well, if I could do a quick run through all the numbers.
Sure.
Clearly, there's a little bit of a slowdown in terms of sales of property. Last year, 2018, we closed out with 10,938 sales. As of today at noontime, we were at 10,328 sales, so it's a little behind last year in terms of sales. The number of mortgages blew it out, though, because of the low interest rates and people continuing to refinance. Last year, we had 19,117 mortgages. This year, again, with a couple of days to go, 23,072 mortgages. Basically, a huge increase, 21% increase over last year. And those are good things, people taking advantage of lower rates and saving themselves some money in the payment of their mortgage. And the good news on foreclosures is they're also very low. A foreclosure deed is when a property has been taken back by a lender, usually for failure to pay a mortgage or, you know, many times with health issues, loss of a job, difficult things that, you know, people find themselves in. But foreclosure deeds are actually down 44% for the year. And it was down the year before that. And the year before that, foreclosure deeds last year were down 12%. And the year before that, they were down 13%. So continuing from the crisis of 2008, every year we stabilized in people losing their home. The number of people losing their homes dropped. Almost the same story with foreclosure notices. A foreclosure notice is the first document that we see at the registry that shows someone's in trouble. We're down 17% this year. We were down 22% over last year. So you can see that's also a continuing trend. But whenever I talk about foreclosure notices, I always like to say if someone's out there facing difficult, the worst thing you can do is wait. I advise you as soon as possible to reach out to a federal housing counselor. NeighborWorks just combined with an organization in Kingston. They combine their forces, and they do a tremendous job at modifications of your loan. But the longer you wait, the more difficult it is to fix it. So if you're having some problems, a medical issue, a loss of job, or something that caught up with you, try to do that right away because there are opportunities to modify your loan. But it's been a good year for those filings.
Did you want to weigh in, Rich?
Yeah, no, I think the overall health of the real estate market is really good. I mean, if this is the last half hour of the last decade of your show, we need to talk about the state of real estate. No, I'm just isn't that how it goes? But no, real estate market it's good. I mean, it's healthy. And again, I firmly believe that in the spring, we're going to have a good spring market. You always talk about the spring market. And as John touched on, you know, with all these people that are refinancing their houses, they're saving a couple of $100 a month, which is really good for them, and it's good for the economy. And I don't see anywhere near the amount of people that are underwater. You almost never see anybody that's, quote, underwater like they were back, you know, a number of years ago in that crisis that we had. And I think most people are doing fairly well with their homes because the values have come back. And they're stable. I mean, I don't see anything that's going to pull the rug out from under the market.
I think the thing I would ask is, when do you start anticipating the spring market? Are we talking the first week of March? Does it happen sooner than that?
Well, first of all, I mean, the last quarter you brought up has been a strong quarter. 4%, 7%, 5%, 2% over the last 4 months, over last year. That's pretty good for the fall to early winter. We're hoping to continue the sales. It's all relative to the month previous, and it is seasonal in terms of recordings. January, February, March aren't the perfect time when you have a foot of snow in the ground to be looking at property, though people still have to move and want to move during those times. I think we're going to have a good beginning to the spring market, and a good spring market. Rates are incredible, and that's going to really drive 2020.
How does politics play a role in the housing market? You know, you've got a big presidential campaign that's going to be, we're going to see people voting, going to people talking about it. The politics play a role in whether folks want to spend their money, whether they want to buy a house, they want to buy a condo, or they want to rent.
We're only a small component of the national market. Clearly, the national economists are concerned about trade, and it has an impact across the country, and everything across the country does have an impact locally. The unemployment rate is tremendous. Just a question of how it really results in an election year. There's uncertainty. I was watching Bloomberg News this morning, and there was some concern about what will happen as we get closer and closer to the huge battle we're going to have, not even with this current fight going on, but as we get past the conventions into the election year and what impact that's going to have on people's confidence in the marketplace. That's kind of what we're talking about. And I know Richard sees that also.
I agree 100% with him, and he said it. He answered the question much more eloquently than I could have. But that's why I'm hoping that we have a really strong spring, so people come off the sidelines, they buy, and they get settled before any tumult in the market.
Well, I also asked this, and I'm going to point it towards you. While I was asking you the general question to John in regards to how politics would have or play a role, especially with the presidential politics and knowing that we got conventions coming up and people heading out to the polls to cast ballots, for who's going to be the nominee for the Democrats, and will they keep President Trump to be their nominee for the Republicans. But I wonder if that plays a role in the cost of building. I know when there were questions about our trade agreements with Canada and Mexico and the materials, that could play a role. Has that played a role in 2019 in regards to the cost of materials to do new construction, or could it still be pending for 2020?
So the answer is yes, it has played a role in the last few months. Price of lumber has gone up. The price of building materials has gone up. Your labor is going to go up now. The minimum wage increase takes effect tomorrow.
Oh, right, that's right.
It's substantial. A minimum wage, not to get off the housing market, but like in a Dunkin' Donuts, my daughter told me that she went to Dunkin' Donuts this morning, and the prices were higher than they were yesterday for the exact same thing. So I believe that not pointing them out, but that a lot of these companies have already, changed their prices. It's going to affect my restaurants tremendously, because it's non-tipped employees. But the real estate question is laborers are going to get more money. But building products like lumber, windows have increased. We don't build anything out of steel. I would be much more concerned about the steel market.
Right.
Coming from
like
Canada,
the folks building in Brockton right now?
I would be much more concerned about steel than lumber. I mean, although granted lumber has gone up, which ultimately, the condos I'm building today are higher than the ones I built, a year ago, because of the costs. So yes, it does play a role.
I know I just teased Brockton for half a sec, but knowing that one of your offices is in downtown Brockton, what's it been like to see the building boom in the city center, and how do you see that being reflective in your numbers for 2020?
Clearly, there's probably 800 units being added to the Brockton housing market, and that certainly good for people that are paying incredibly high rates. North of us in Boston, it's incredible. Not a lot of single home building going on. It's kind of spotty. There's more of that going on, you know, between Brockton and Plymouth. But clearly, there's not been a lot of new housing added other than apartment units in that northern end of the county.
Okay. Good to know. I think I would ask Richard, knowing that there may be somebody who's out there who's considering selling their home in the spring, or maybe they're prepping it right now. I mean, is this the right time to be prepping your home for a spring sale?
I would say January, February. You know, people tend to go crazy when they want to sell their house of what they should do and shouldn't do. And, you know, if you're going to replace your carpets, I mean, unless it, you know, I could go on for a half hour about what you should do and shouldn't do, but I would, if you're going to list your house, I would call your realtor and have him come in and tell them what you think you should do or shouldn't do. Sometimes you shouldn't do as much as you think you should because you're not going to get that money back when you sell it. But January, February is the time, in my opinion, to start thinking about the spring market, which, you know, March, April, is really a good time.
Trent, do you find yourself, when it comes to looking at the numbers, you're a numbers guy. You and I have talked numbers for years. Following the trends, do you find sometimes that you can kind of get an idea as to how a year can go for numbers, at least the first quarter or two into a new year?
Well, I don't think we anticipated when we always based the county budget on estimates of revenue coming in and estimates of how the market would do, and we do it like 18 months before the end of the budget. And I don't think we anticipated the boom in refis. So there's some things you just can't expect. The Federal Reserve was going to raise rates, as we remember, and Trump kept beating them over the head about it. And I think they also made their individual decisions that lowering interest rates was a good thing. And people have really responded to that by this huge refinancing boom. I don't think we could have anticipated that. I think next year we're looking for a continuation of what we've seen this year, and there's no cloud on the horizon but from the Federal Reserve impacting rates negatively. The only question is how much would a global economy, European meltdown, U.S.-China meltdown come to roost down here in Plymouth County?
So what we really need to have happen is we need a lot of these first-time buyers to get off the sidelines and buy, because right. What happens is, but for them to buy, you need houses that are within their reach to be able to buy. I don't want to use the term affordable because I don't want to say affordable housing versus what a first-time buyer can buy, because people get the wrong notion. But so if you've got the first-time buyers coming in, so you were a first-time buyer and you've owned a house for a while, and now you're going to sell it because you want to move up. So what happens is the market works really well when things work really well, meaning the first-time buyer steps off the sideline, buys that house that they can afford. Those people move up to either a newer house or a new house, and which is their second or third, and the other people, and it just goes that way. It's like a chain of events that has to happen, and that's what makes the market work. And then you have these over 55 projects where people have lived in their houses for, you know, 30 years, and those are the people that are moving out of that house into the over 55 that helps the market tremendously, because sometimes those houses are within range of the first-time buyer. So we need a number of those things to happen for the market to work and to work well. And what that requires is a housing stock, and that's what we need.
Well, we see some of that housing stock. I mean, you have a lot of baby boomers who are, you know, moving into their retirement years ever so slowly. I mean, we're going to start seeing more and more of those houses up for sale and helping to replenish the housing stock? Is that what we're kind of waiting for?
There are a lot of studies that I've seen out there that show people are holding on to their homes longer than they did, and that's probably the combination of the high values, combination of younger people with student debt and trying to get a down payment, combined with that has really slowed down people making the move up to ownership. The percentage of ownership across the country has dropped as a fact. And clearly, the number one advocates for home ownership are realtors. And that's why it's always great when I come on this show to have a realtor here with me.
Real professional.
I think I read something that home ownership is at one of the lows for, decades.
Right.
Home ownership. You know, we were talking about new construction, the condo project that I did in Whitman. Was 44 units, and I would bet you that 75% of the people that live in there were first-time buyers because it was within their reach. Again, those are the people like my daughter who, instead of going to rent an apartment, can get a mortgage and pay less. And there's a number of those in that project, and I'm starting a new project, and I'm actually just starting to see the exact same thing. But those people moving in don't have a house to sell. The first-time buyers and they're moving in. But it helps move those things along.
Do you want to add in?
No, I think what he's saying is the problem that we're all going to face over the next few years is trying to get people comfortable enough to make a move to downsize in certain cases and open up those properties for others.
It's very true. Anything else we want to touch upon before we close up? Because I want to take a moment to recognize, you know, with the new year is a lot of excitement that's permeating down in the town of Plymouth, knowing that it's a big anniversary. And I want to give you an opportunity to chat it up a little bit. But anything we haven't, any stone we haven't turned over talking about real estate or the real estate trends for not only the last quarter of 2019, but, you know, comparing it to 2019 to 2018.
I think we covered it pretty well. I think we're optimistic that as we turn into the new year, as we get into the spring and summer, that there's no reason to believe that it's not going to continue to be at a good pace.
I agree. I'm extremely optimistic that we're going to have a good real estate market in 2020. And I must say how honored I am to be here in your very last show of the decade with a gentleman like John Buckley, who knows more about real estate statistics than anybody.
He does. And then he comes prepared.
He does his job and he does it well.
Whether he's here in person or he does it on the phone, he is, you know, flush with numbers. If folks have any questions in regards to real estate and real estate market, Mr. Rosen, is there a way for them maybe to reach out to you, one of your mini agents?
Sure. They can call my office in Whitman at 781-447-1111.
Okay. So as I teased just a few moments ago, and again, we're speaking with John Buckley, Plymouth County Register of Deeds. Three locations, right?
We have our main office in Plymouth on Oberry Street, yep, next to the hospital,
yep,
in front of the trial court. We have our satellite office, our new satellite office in Brockton, next to Brockton Superior Court,
sure,
on the corner of Belmont and Carter Street, and an office in Rockland on Hingman Street, in the AAA Plaza.
Okay, so I just want to make sure I was correct with that.
Yes, correct.
But no, and of course we have Richard Rosen, who has been here for this segment as well. But the 400th anniversary of Plymouth.
Well, I'm always reminding my friends from Plymouth, this is a celebration of Plymouth Colony. Now, Plymouth Colony went all the way from Plymouth to Tiverton, Rhode Island, all the way up to the Bridgewater Purchase, which included Brockton. The only towns in Plymouth County which were not part of Plymouth Colony were Hingham and Hull. So it was a far encompassing area. The original towns were, you know, Plymouth, Duxbury, Marshfield, Bridgewater. All of those communities should be aware that they're celebrating their heritage. When the arrival of the colonists in 1620 came, they really opened it up for all of us. And there's a certain number of events happening that are great. If anyone wants to go and see the main events by the Plymouth 400, go on the Plymouth 400 website. There's some great things happening over the course of the year. We're actually going to be partnering with South Shore Realtors on an event, the Celebration of Private Property Rights, which we attribute to the colonists. Our first deed in the handwriting of William Bradford was a replication of what is downtown Plymouth at the time of the layout of land once they arrived and worked their way up what was known as the street, which is now Lydon Street. You can actually walk the street where the colonists walked every day up to Burial Hill, and actually the office of Plymouth 400 is on that corner, and you can go in there and stop and see what they have. But in 1623, the colonists realized that while from 1620 to 1623, they lived in a communal property right situation, they were assigned land to use. After the starving time, they decided to allot lands to individuals because they knew they would get more production out of them, and it worked. That is the foundation of private property rights in America. I know nobody celebrates that more than our realtors, and that's why we're working with the South Shore Realtors to do an event that celebrates that. And it's something that all across America is part of American life now, the ability to own your own property.
It's interesting. Do you not have a special room down at your Plymouth office that has documents from around that time or somewhere in where then?
So with the support of our county commissioners and with grants we receive from a technology fund with the support of Secretary Galvin, we built a humidity and temperature controlled room.
Nice.
That stores in a vault the original colonial records. Now the original colonial records not only include deeds, they include decisions of the courts, wills of Miles Standish, this decision by the colony court to allow trial by jury in America, and clearly a lot of land records, again, that went all the way from the Plymouth site all the way to Rhode Island, including Barnstable in Bristol County. So those records are priceless, and we're looking to be part of sharing that with people in the 2020 celebration.
And it's just amazing. I could listen to him talk about these things all day. I've listened to John talk about these things before.
John loves history.
And you know what? It's amazing the stuff that they actually have. And I know that John does his show and he talks about the deeds. And to think that this stuff is still around, you know, 400 years later.
Well, people cared enough to preserve it.
Which is amazing. You know, it's wonderful. And I think what he does is, it's really educational. And it's great.
So the great thing is there were people with a lot of foresight in the state legislature in the 1800s did a preservation of these records. They interleaved them onto some kind of a special paper and they bound them into books. And that took the original parchment documents and preserved them in a way that is still here 400 years later. It's incredible. And when you look at our documents, you're looking at the handwriting of the colonists at the time they were making these decisions. And the one that I described for you, and I know I'm getting off the real estate course, though.
It's okay.
The decision by the colonial court to allow a trial by jury in America, and back in the time it was a patriarchal society, men were running the show and were the jury. But when they made that decision, they wrote down a jury of 12 men. And in the handwritten document, they crossed out men and they wrote in honest men. So you can see the original cross out of them that would have been done in that thatched building, you know, back 400 years ago.
Goodness,
and
unbelievable.
We had Chief Justice Gantz that came down for a meeting across the street at the trial court, and we invited him over to see that. And people like that, the Massachusetts trial court system, when they talk about your requirement to do jury duty, they have a description on that page that describes Massachusetts in Plymouth Colony being the place where they first transitioned the right to trial by jury from England.
Are there any set of events that you're looking forward to most come next year?
I think for our perspective, the celebration of private property rights, because that's what we do at the registry, is going to be an important one. And we're looking to engage a whole series of partners as we go forward, home builders, the realtors that we talked about, all the way up the chain. And I think it's a celebration for all of us. And anyone that's in the real estate business should be proud of that. Clearly, there's some great things run by Plymouth 400. I'm looking forward to the Maritime Celebration.
Sure.
Which is in a...
Return of the Mayflower, too?
Return of the Mayflower, the tall ships that are going to be coming in. They've done a lot of dredging in Plymouth Harbor to allow those ships to come in.
Thanks to the Plymouth County Dredge.
And that'll be in warm weather again.
Yes.
Thank God. So...
Anything you're looking forward to as far as any events down in Plymouth for the 400th?
I think it's going to be a really exciting summer in Plymouth.
We had Michelle, I want to say...
Pecoraro.
Michelle Pecoraro. We had her on a couple of months ago. There was a whole litany of items. I think what I'm going to do is see if Matt Muratori might be available next week.
Sure.
Or even Kathy Lenatra, and have a conversation as to some of the events, because I know a lot of our elected officials are very well... connected and up to date, up to speed with a lot of these things that are going on. Maybe some of the folks from the local Chamber of Commerce, Plymouth Area Chamber of Commerce, maybe we can have them in to talk. Because I know that they've been very busy, not only with the lobsters that they had to kind of celebrate the 400th, but then they also had the scallop rolls, the little scallop shells, which were really cool.
And I will add that Matt and Vinny DeMacedo did a great job getting money from the state budget down to Plymouth 400.
How much do you think the town of Plymouth is going to miss a guy like... Well, first off, I know how much they were missing Terry when Senate President Terry Murray decided to step down and not seek another term. But then Vinny kind of following suit, you know, another someone, you know, who's well-known and beloved in the town of Plymouth.
Yeah, I mean, the people that are running... will do a great job, but Vinny was very supportive of our operation. And I remember when we were originally building our new building, it had been vetoed twice by Governor Cellucci. Tom O'Brien was the rep at the time, moving it through. They finally got it passed a third time, and a new governor was in place by then, Jane Swift. And Vinny went to her and said, "Hey, Governor Swift, just don't veto it. Leave it alone. Let it go into effect in 10 days go past." And he was able to talk to her about that, and she allowed it to go through. And that's why we have our big, beautiful building.
And it's, again, located where?
It's on 50 Obrey Street in Plymouth.
Fantastic. Well, I want to thank you both for joining me this evening. Are you gentlemen the type to make New Year's resolutions or just plan to do better for the new year? Richard?
Yeah, I don't make resolutions because it never works, but I always strive to do better. You have to. You have to strive to do better.
Amen. John?
Yeah, I think we all try to do better, and clearly I'm focused on trying to make sure I get to the gym a little more. You get distracted so much in the working world, and something I need to try to focus on. I go a couple days a week. I think I need to bump that by double.
See myself, it's a matter of healthy choices. And depending on whether I go to McGuigan's Pub or the patio at McGuigan's, there's always healthy choices if you go to any restaurant, whether it's those two fantastic eateries or anywhere else. That's what I did last year, was just to be a slimmer talk show host.
And, you know, I know that... in radio land, people can't see you, but
it's
you do look terrific. You've lost some weight. And
I still
you
need
look
to
great.
Trim a few. Listen, if I'm gonna be doing any more rides down in Disney come the new year, I gotta take a couple more pounds off. That's what I'll probably try to do. But I want to thank both of you for being my final guest of 2019 and for the decade.
So Happy New Year to everybody.
Same. Happy New Year.
Happy New
Year.
Happy
and healthy New Year.
Happy New Year to Ben. And folks, that's it. Until 2020, next week at 6:15 p.m., have yourself a great evening.